history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Remember when you were a kid and you had a science class assignment where you had to identify the different kinds of clouds? Oh, you don't remember that? Well, how well is atmospheric science taught in schools? We'll explore weather education during this week's edition of Jet Streaming.
Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra.
Hello and welcome to another Jet Streaming, the 26th week of the podcast devoted to the weather and climatology. I'm Kathy Werzer, along with Dr. Mark Seeley, Professor of Climatology and Earth Sciences at the University of Minnesota. Good to see you again.
Good to be with you, Kathy.
I always like that song.
I do too. I like the beat to that song.
And it kind of encapsulates my entire educational career. Right there. Let us start with some weather-related news headlines, why don't we? Maybe you've heard of the lawsuit filed by the state of California that attempted to hold the world's six largest automakers accountable for their contributions to global warming. A federal judge has thrown out that lawsuit. The judge, Martin Jenkins in San Francisco, says it would be impossible to determine the extent to which automakers are responsible for damage to the environment.
And you know, Kathy, speaking of global warming, coastal maps created by scientists at the University of Arizona and based on data from the U.S. Geological Survey show that rising seas caused by disappearing polar ice sheets will slowly erase some of the best-known coastal areas of places like Virginia, Florida, Texas, and California. Mm. The scientists say the melting ice will cause oceans to rise by 1 meter, 39 inches. What is unclear is when this might occur. The issue of rising ocean levels will come up later this week when world leaders convene to talk about fighting global warming.
Of course, we'll continue to follow that. Finally, China's commercial center, Shanghai, is, as you probably know, a beehive of activity on most days. But as of this program, an estimated 200,000 people have been told to leave the city ahead of the expected arrival of a typhoon, a storm which could potentially be the most destructive typhoon to hit the city in a decade. Well, how often do stories like these make it into science classrooms? We'll talk about weather-based education as Jet Streaming continues. This is a topic near and dear to Professor Seeley's heart. What do you do to help science teachers improve their atmospheric science offerings in the classroom?
Well, we stress a lot of public engagement at the University of Minnesota, where I've been about 30 years now, Kathy, and as a consequence, I've done some continuing education classes. These are offered in the evening hours on teaching meteorology or atmospheric science basics to engineers. Believe it or not, we sometimes have these short workshops for road engineers or energy sector people, the people that provide our energy. Agricultural sector is another one that we deal with. Tourism is another one. In addition to that, I've had the privilege of being involved in a science teacher education program for the last 12 years that is administered through the American Meteorological Society, our large national organization called Data Stream Atmosphere. And it's gratifying to see that a lot of the curriculum, the base curriculum in atmospheric science, gets diffused down into the school classroom this way by training the school science teachers to incorporate some of this into their earth science curriculum.
Well, as a matter of fact, the AMS, as you mentioned, has this program. And joining us with more on this is Dr. Jim Bray. He's a scientist in residence with the AMS education program. Jim is on loan from the University of Wisconsin. Welcome to a fellow Midwesterner. How are you, Jim?
I'm fine. Good to be here.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm curious from where you sit, your perspective, how well is climatology and meteorology and oceanography taught in schools nowadays?
Well, I think it's very uneven. I think there has been somewhat of a de-emphasis of science with a lot of the testing programs and the No Child Left Behind. Some of those initiatives, I think they're very good in some ways, have squeezed out some of the science content. Teachers are finding it difficult to have time to devote classroom exploration to the sciences. There's also the phenomenon of many teachers teaching subjects that they really haven't had a lot of experience with, and AMS kind of jumped into that fray very, very early, going back into the early 1990s with a residency program called Project Atmosphere, and that trained teachers in partnership with the National Weather Service at the National Weather Service Training Center in Kansas City. And a lot of the things that were learned from teachers at that workshop and from the development of materials was ported into a innovative new program called the DataStream Project that Mark mentioned, which started out in 1996.
Say, Jim, to follow up on that a little bit, with the history of DataStream now fairly well documented, how many school science teachers nationwide have you been able to reach with this curriculum?
I don't have those exact numbers at my fingertips, but it must be, you know, clearly in the thousands. I'm not exactly sure of the exact number, but it is very, very high, and we're very, very proud because many of these teachers still keep in touch with us. We have our best connection with those that actually offer the course as a part of local implementation teams that you're in fact a part of and have been for a long time.
Write it down for some of us who are not teachers. What offerings are a part of DataStream?
Well, the DataStream course really is a 12 to 13 week course in sort of basic meteorology, and the focus there is to provide teachers with content. Many of them, even if they've had a meteorology course, are a bit rusty, and here we provide robust content so that the teachers then can go into the classroom having mastered this content and learned about a lot of education materials and then have the confidence to present this to their students.
Jim, does the DataStream education program for school science teachers, does it have a parallel in other scientific societies? I suspect that perhaps with some it does. In other words, the education arm of these scientific societies, are they as focused on teacher education as you are?
I think the AMS is really quite unique in having devoted time and resources to this endeavor. I can't think of another scientific society that actually offers, organized activities year in and year out nationwide. In fact, our activities have served as models for some things being done in Canada and Australia. What DataStream Atmosphere really is, and this the same goes for DataStream Oceans and DataStream Water in the Earth Systems, the two companion courses to DataStream Atmosphere, is in fact a hybrid course. The teachers take an online course, but they also meet with the fellow teachers that are taking the course in the local region on Saturdays or in the evenings to share experiences, often share a meal, and probably see something interesting with a visit to a weather service office or that sort of thing. That kind of thing is very, very unique, and I've not heard of any other society doing it.
There's one other unique attribute that I've been very impressed with, Jim. In the discipline of atmospheric science, I think one thing that AMS with the DataStream program does in an exemplary fashion is infuse real-time events and episodes into the curriculum, because everybody can relate the weather to some aspect of their life. And during the course of the semester, I note that your online curriculum infuses the actual occurrences of weather. In other words, when there are tropical storms or severe thunderstorms or winter storms or whatever, and the character and attribute of those are infused into the education material. I think that's just absolutely outstanding.
It's a very important pedagogical theme. There is no question that students become more excited when they're studying a meteorological concept, and to do that, they're studying today's weather, and that is a sort of a device developed by Dr. Ira Geer, who is our sort of our education program founder, and he has, even before joining AMS, sort of focused on that excitement that real-time weather provides. So what we do, as a matter of fact, and I'm even involved in that to some degree now that I'm here in Washington, is on Monday and Wednesday, we create a lesson for that week's course topic that utilizes today's weather map, and that makes us really unique. It makes it a little tense here sometimes, because sometimes Mother Nature does not provide good examples of what we want to teach, and we have to kind of scurry around to find something in the continental United States that will provide that good example to sort of provide content for a dozen or so questions that the teachers will work on with their mentors back home.
You know, I know we're talking about science teachers here, gentlemen, but what about geeky individuals like me who really, really love the weather and want to know more about meteorology? Is there any program for adults or even others who might be interested in something like that?
I'm not sure that we necessarily offer it just for the general public. We are funded through a variety of funding mechanisms. DataStream certainly got its start through NSF and a lot of cooperation with NOAA of late to continue to offer the course. Those funding requirements require that we focus on K-12 teachers, essentially. But we do not just focus on science teachers. I have had long experience with teachers from a variety of fields, kindergarten teachers, art teachers, language teachers, that have taken our courses and taken something from that they can infuse into their lessons within their disciplines.
And if you have a teacher listening here today, is this program free to them, or is there a cost involved?
No, it's completely free. And details can be found on our website, which is www.ametsoc.org/AMSEDU. And we actually have 5 courses that provide them with 3 free graduate credits through SUNY Brockport. 2 of the courses are actual residence programs. The first one I mentioned, Project Atmosphere, is in Kansas City at the National Weather Service Training Center. The other residency program is the MORI project that is held in the summer at Annapolis at the Naval Academy. There's quite a bit of competition for those 2-week residency programs, as you might imagine. We utilize those to develop kind of a leadership cadre in our teacher group. But it's not a particularly efficient way to inform teachers about weather topics in terms of the numbers that we can serve. It's quite expensive, and the numbers that we can serve are rather limited. But the DataStream Distance Ed program literally can serve thousands of teachers, and it's done with kind of a local national partnership between local implementation leaders in Wisconsin or Minnesota or whatever state, and then the National AMS Education Office here in Washington that creates the learning materials.
Hey, but final question here for you, Jim, and Mark, you can chime in too. In your vast experience, both of you, where is there a specific school that you've heard that really does a fine meteorology course, atmospheric science, oceanography course that you think it really across the country really is a standard to try to hit?
Boy, locally, Kathy, in the Wisconsin and Minnesota systems, I think around Western Wisconsin, the Hudson School District tends to do a good idea. Western Wisconsin School District there around Hudson. Twin Cities area, there's probably several that have what we call science magnet programs that have well-trained earth science teachers, particularly, that do a lot of very good teaching, have infused this curriculum well. And in fact, I might add from firsthand experience, it's really triggered much more participation in science fairs and doing science fair projects that are related to the atmospheric and earth sciences. I'm not sure about you, Jim. You can probably speak for maybe the D.C. or the Wisconsin areas, but those are characteristics of our local school systems here.
I have some good experience in the Wisconsin area where, you know, we've had our DataStream programs running for a long time. And what has happened in the Appleton School District, which is fairly near where I live, is that many of the middle schools have had virtually all of their science teachers participate in virtually all of our courses. So there may be four or five science teachers that have had DataStream Oceans, DataStream Water, DataStream Atmosphere, and it has fundamentally changed the way they do science. There is systemic change in those schools, and I am to the point now where I get those students in my college classes, and they think more creatively about science. They have better background information, and it goes back to these teachers really infusing this excitement and this very up-to-date, you know, relevant material into their classrooms. And that's what's very exciting about our programs, because I think that that is replicated all across the country. We are in the business of systemic change, particularly in middle schools and high schools, and we're beginning to see the fruits of that.
Wow. I think I just, I'm too old. I wish I would have had some of this when I was younger. Jim, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Mark.
We've been talking to Dr. Jim Bray. He's a scientist in residence with the AMS Education Program based in Washington, D.C. Now, we here at Jet Streaming have been doing some thinking about how we can partner with teachers and reach out to students. And we'd like to offer the chance for young students interested in the weather to join us during one of our programs. Maybe that's helping us do an interview, or better yet, doing some recording of a special weather-related science project. We can put that on Jet Streaming. No matter, we'd like to hear from teachers and students. Our special email is weather@minnesotapublicradio.org. weather@minnesotapublicradio.org.
That's easy to remember.
I think so.
Yes.
I think it'd be kind of fun to have some young folk join us.
Well, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for a week that we hear from somebody here.
I hope you will. We have heard, by the way, from one of our listeners. We actually do hear from you. We appreciate you listening, because Lord knows we want to know who's out there. Here, Mark Seely, is a listener question. It comes from Chris from Lakeville, Minnesota. Chris writes, I hope it's not too late for a hurricane question, because it seems you've talked about them in most of your last few Jet Streaming podcasts, being at the height of hurricane season and all. It's often spoken of hurricanes being strong, but what is considered when discussing or arriving at the strength of a hurricane? Is it the central pressure, its greatest wind speed, the eyewall diameter, or some combination of those parameters? And which parameters? Or, Chris says, is there a subjective component? And how much of one?
Oh, mercy.
Good luck.
That's a big question.
Yeah.
Well, technically speaking, to answer Chris's question, the weather services of the world use the Saffir-Simpson scale to categorize the strength of hurricanes based on the three elements: the sustained one-minute wind speed, maximum wind speed, the minimum central pressure, and the expected storm surge. In other words, how much the coastal areas are going to deviate above normal tide. Now, that is done in a forecasting scheme to classify whether it's a strength 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, with 5 being the maximum. And scales like that, Kathy, are used in both the Pacific and the Atlantic basins. But the reality is, in the long-term history of hurricane research, the singular attribute that has been used the most to refer to the strength or intensity of a hurricane is the central pressure, mm-hmm. the lowest central pressure. And, for example, in the Atlantic Basin, the lowest central pressure, and therefore what's classified historically as the strongest hurricane, was Wilma in 2005, with a central pressure of 882 millibars, or 26.05 inches on the barometer. Now, to scale this, up here in the Western Great Lakes region where you and I live, the strongest low pressure system to ever pass across our region was 2840. So this is fully over 2 inches lower barometric pressure than that,
mm-hmm.
Wilma. Now, they have even stronger classes of these storms out in the Western Pacific, where Typhoon Tip back in 1979 holds the world record, not just the basin record, but the world record for lowest central pressure. And Typhoon Tip had a low pressure of 25.69 inches.
Wow.
So in terms of answering Chris's question, the Saffir-Simpson scale is used by the weather services, but in terms of historical classification of strength or intensity, the single most referred to attribute is the central barometric pressure. Of course, everything comes into play in terms of assessing the destructive potential. You've got storm surge, wind speed, you've got the intensity of rainfall, you've got the frequency or density of lightning strikes, number of tornadoes spawned. You have all of these factor into what the consequence of one of these storms might be. And we all know that we've already seen, for example, Hurricane Dean
right.
last month,
right.
which was one of the strongest ever measured in the Atlantic Basin and devastated the Yucatan Peninsula there in Mexico.
Well, you did a fine job answering that question.
Well, I hope that's a satisfactory answer. We'll probably hear from listeners if it is not.
That is a good thing. Time, friends, for the weather website of the week. And my choice is weatherwizkids.com. Weatherwizkids.com. This is a nice site full of fun experiments for kids to get them interested in the weather. It's created by Crystal Wicker. And Crystal is the weekend meteorologist for WRTV-TV in Indianapolis, Indiana. You might want to try the experiment, Mark, for making rain.
I think I'll go there and see what I can find.
And amaze your friends at your next party. It's actually a very cute website. A lot of good experiments and just a lot of information for kids. Weatherwizkids.com.
With the theme of education on this
see?
Week's show, that's a perfect fit.
There you go. Go to that website and try it out. And then next week, you can amaze us here with what you found out. How's that? That's going to wrap up Jet Streaming, by the way, for this week. Thank you, Mark. Good to see you.
Thank you, Kathy.
Again, if you have a question for the Jet Streaming crew, if you are a student who wants to participate in Jet Streaming, drop us a line at weather@minnesotapublicradio.org. Until next week, remember to keep your eyes on the sky.
Keep on the sunny side. Oh.